Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Across the Sky, our national Lee Enterprises weather podcast. I'm Matt Hollander, based in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm joined by my fellow meteorologist, Joe Martucci in Atlantic City, New Jersey, Sean Sublett in Richmond, Virginia, and Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, we try and stay timely here at Across the Sky, so with winter officially beginning this week, this week's episode is all about winter. Specifically, the top 10 things you should know about winter. Now, you may recall we did a similar episode back in the fall, and at the beginning of that one, I asked, is fall your favorite season? Such an innocent question. Well, maybe I shouldn't have, because it turned into quite the debate, but we're going to do it again this time. Is winter your favorite season? Why or why not? And Joe, we're going to start with you, because you disappointed all of us last time with your answer about fall, so here's your chance to redeem yourself.
Well, so if you remember back on the fall podcast, you know, I said I have multiple, like there's differences within the seasons here. So it's not just like winter in a nutshell. So there's winter without snow and there's winter with snow. So if we're talking about winter with snow, it's probably my second favorite season behind summer. Winter without snow is like last. So that's my answer for you. Now, winter in Florida could also be my favorite season, but I don't live in Florida. I live in New Jersey. So that's my answer on winter, my convoluted answer on winter.
So, Joe, you were not a happy camper last year.
Well, no. So here's the other thing. I mean, if we're going to like have a winter like what we had here in New Jersey, like we might as well break the record. So I was fine, actually, with our record low snow because it was something to talk about. You know, so again, you know, last winter was okay. I could live with it because we had a record snowless winter. But like I said in the fall podcast, like 50s are the worst. It might as well be cold or it might as well be warm. 50s is like temperature purgatory. So that's my
okay. Thought. I think you make a good point, Joe, with the whole regional aspect, because I think you're right. In some parts of the country, winter is the best time of year. Arizona, great. Best time to go to Arizona. Florida, yeah. Probably fantastic. I don't know. I haven't been down there in the winter, but I would assume.
South Padre Island,
Texas. It's again, fantastic. Another great spot in the winter. But I'm with you. I think if you have a winter, we talked about this yesterday, four of us just casually, like 34 degrees, 33 degrees and raining. That is probably the worst combination I can think of, hands down. I mean, it is not. Like, what is it doing? You know what I mean? It's just, it's like snow or don't snow. If you're not going to snow, then don't be that cold and have like something falling from the sky. That's how I feel about that. And then with winter too, for me, at least I'll just jump right in there. I don't know. It's not, if I get it, I just want like one snow. So like, I'll take a good, like, you know, a good week and a half of winter and then I'm ready to move on because I don't like the cold. It makes me not feel great. And like my fingers hurt. So I don't like the cold weather.
Yeah. You know, talking about the regional differences. Yeah. When I was in Texas, winter wasn't that big a deal, especially when I was in the Rio Grande Valley, South Padre Island. It is very nice. Lots of 70 degree days in the winter. Like that is not uncommon. And when it's highs are in the 50s, I was like, oh, it's so cold. And then I moved to Chicago and oh, the definition of cold definitely changed. And now winter has definitely fallen to my least favorite season because all those great outdoor activities that you can do in Chicago in the summer that actually you avoid doing in Texas in the summer because it's so hot. But there's so much you can do in the summer. And suddenly when winter comes around in Chicago, the number of things you can do drops. Now, Chicago is a big city, so the people have gotten used to the cold. And so there is a fair number of indoor activities, but all the outdoor stuff suddenly disappears. And so winter's just not as fun. So it is now my least favorite season.
What about like pond hockey though, Matt?
See, I grew up in Texas, so I have no idea how to play hockey. I would kill myself probably.
You know, I was actually thinking about this morning in prep for our podcast. You know, the other thing I like, again, if it's going to be winter, it's got to be like cold and snowy because growing up, we actually did play pond hockey for like a couple of days. It's not like Minnesota where it freezes for like 3 months at a time. But there were a couple of days where you played hockey on the river. We used to play hockey on the Raritan River in Union County, New Jersey. So that's also a nice thing about winter.
And Sean, how do you feel about winter?
Well, as they say, it depends. Here's what I'll say to Joe's point and to Kirsten's too. If it's going to be cold, it might as well snow. Unfortunately, the atmosphere just doesn't work that way, as much as we would like. But here's what I will say about snow. I love a good snow, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inches. Go ahead, throw down 14, 16 inches. I'm fine. But what I really want after that is for it to all melt in 2 or 3 days. Now, you melt down 16 inches of snow in 2 or 3 days, you've got a flood issue. But I just don't like it when it snows and it just sits there for 4 and 5 weeks. It gets dirty. The roads are just dirty. Everything has got this nasty kind of bleh all over it. So that's what I don't like. Now, we don't have a lot of that, obviously, here in Virginia. Most of the time when we do get a big snow, it does melt reasonably quickly. This also reminds me of an English teacher I had in high school growing up in Virginia. He said he loves 6 inches of snow. He said he just wished it would all fall at once. Whoomp. I'm like, that's probably not the best for the roof.
That's true.
Mr. Bowling, but it's something to think about. But I don't mind winter. I am good down to about 20 degrees. Once we get down below 20 degrees, then I begin to have issues. But I'm good down to about 20. Once we start getting below 20, I'm not real happy.
I got a question. What's the coldest temperature you guys ever been in?
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. I'll start with that one. 20 degrees below zero.
What? In Virginia?
No. This was when I was in grad school up at Penn State. It was January 94. Brutal outbreak.
And how happy were you in that valley when it was minus 20?
No, here's what I think. I remember the day before, we're all up in the weather center going, I thought we know it was going to be cold, right? I mean, but we were like, it's probably going to get down to 3 or 4 below zero, maybe 5 or 6 below zero. You know, we were all prepping for that. Wake up in the morning, turn on the weather channel, minus 18. Mind blown, man. Blown. I mean, we had just had snow. There was thick snowpack. Arctic high builds over. Sky is clear. There's no wind. Boom. Good night. It was brutal. It was brutal. Now, obviously, it wasn't windy, but man, at minus 18, that wind doesn't matter. It's just awful. It's just awful.
Yeah, I think my record is minus 14 in Silverthorne, Colorado, visiting my grandmother. And it was one of those nights with right after a fresh snow, clear skies, light winds, and it just bottomed out. And I stepped outside and had to experience it. And I was like, oh, this is cold. And I went right back inside.
Yeah, mine was negative 11. That was in Denver. It just hurts your face. Like, it's just, you know, you walk out and it just hurts. That's all.
I'm going to come in last place here. I've only been down to negative 4. I don't know. It was one time where I used to work in the valleys of Northwest New Jersey. So cold air can pool, you know, in the valleys there. And it got down to negative 4. And it was cold enough where you can do that water, you know, the hot water in the air, and it turns into a cloud trick. But that's it. I guess I haven't been like up north in the winter, further north in the winter, or in Colorado, I guess, for that matter.
It's okay to leave New Jersey sometimes, Joe. You got to travel a little bit more.
Listen, I don't know why you would have to leave. I mean, first of all, now here's a good thing. Speaking of winter, you guys all got to get out of your car to pump your gas in the winter where it's 10. You guys are getting out there. You might even just be coming from the gym. You guys are in shorts and a t-shirt. You know, you're like, oh, I got to get out of the car now for 5 minutes. I haven't gotten out of the car to pump gas since March. And the last time I've gotten out of the car to pump gas when it's cold, I don't think I've even ever done that in my life. So... You just roll down the window, say, hey, I need to fill it up credit, roll up the window, and then you roll it back down to get the receipt, and then you're gone.
Okay. Touche.
Yeah, but you didn't go in, and get that great Wawa coffee that I like when you do that at Wawa.
You do that on a separate trip. I mean, we were talking about this, like, weren't we talking about this, like, a couple of days ago? Like, I don't go into a gas station convenience store, like, just, like, while I'm getting gas, because... You just don't. I'm on my phone or talking to somebody or whatever. When you guys come here to the Press of Atlantic City for our weather meetup, we'll do it all. We'll get the whole gauntlet ready for you guys.
Yeah, before this turns into another New Jersey podcast, we do have to keep talking about winter because there is a lot of weather to talk about. So coming up, it's the top 10 things to know about winter. There's no particular order to this list. These are just the 10 most important things we think you should know. And we'll dive right into it after this break. And we're back on Across the Sky to kick off our list. Like we did last time with fall, we're going to talk about the timing of winter. There are multiple start and end dates, so it gets a little confusing. Joe, what can you tell us about the different ways to define winter?
Yeah, so we actually did an article on this on your favorite Lee Enterprises local news website. So, you know, we're dropping this episode on the 18th of December, and you probably look at your calendar and you see, hey, the first day of winter is on Thursday, the 21st. And yes, that's true. That is the start of one of three ways to define winter, though. So that's astronomical winter, which is based on the tilt of the Earth around the sun. So on the winter solstice, the sun's direct rays are overhead at the Tropic of Capricorn, which is about 22 and a half degrees south latitude. But there's other ways to define it. There's solar seasons and there's climatological seasons. So for us in the weather world, and if you're listening to this podcast, you probably have some interest in weather. We go off of climatological seasons, which is the coldest 3 months of the year, the warmest 3 months of the year, and the ones in between. So for most of the United States, coldest 3 months are December, January, and February, and we call that climatological winter, the coldest 3 months of the year. Then there's the solar seasons, which is based on how much daylight we have. Because remember, on the astronomical winter, it's the shortest day of the year already. So, you know, you can think about pluses and minuses in all different ways. But, you know, if you're thinking about solar winter, the one advantage that has is that, you know, you're taking the thing that probably a lot of people think about when they think about the season, which is how long is it daylight out? And as we know, during the winter, it's not very light out for long. So the solar seasons take the three shortest months of the year when it comes to daytime. Climatological winter takes a look at the three shortest months, or excuse me, the three coldest months of the year. And then the astronomical seasons really is just based on, hey, the sun's direct rays go from the Tropic of Capricorn to the equator. So in my humble Across the Sky podcast opinion, I would say that climatological seasons make the most sense. Solar seasons is second. And astronomical winter, I just don't really see a lot of value in that. Like, why does winter start on our shortest day of the year? Like, it's not even our coldest day of the year. It's just the shortest day of the year. That's my thoughts. We can discuss that if we want, but that's my thoughts on that. And then the differences between the three kinds of seasons.
It does make things complicated for people. All these different times, it's like winter is here. And it's like, wait, is it here though? Wait,
winter is what you want it to be. How about that?
I do. As a meteorologist, I am biased to meteorological winter, December, January, February. I like to think that, you know, magically at the end of February, we don't have to worry about snow anymore and ice anymore and cold anymore, but certainly not in the Midwest. That keeps going into March and sometimes April. But I like to think that, oh, winter's over, end of February, the end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the temperatures make most sense. It makes most sense for most of the country too. There's a couple of exceptions, like, you know, in California, like San Diego, for example, the hottest 3 months of the year are July, August, and September. But for most places, it's, you know, the seasons line up. Those climatological seasons add up nicely where June, July, and August is summer. December, January, February is winter. The months in between are spring and fall.
Okay, well, that's how you define winter. But moving on to our number two thing you need to know about winter. It's definitely the most famous thing about winter. Snow. Now, I know some people love snow. Some people hate snow. But if you're a snow hater, don't hate it too much because snow is sensitive. It's actually pretty hard to form. Now, snow is made up of ice crystals, but in order to get ice crystals to actually fall as snow, temperatures in the atmosphere need to really be no warmer than 14 degrees and no colder than minus 4 degrees. If it's colder than minus 4, then the ice crystals that form are probably going to be too small to fall. And if it's warmer than 14, not enough water vapor is going to change into ice crystals in the first place. So this sweet spot of minus 4 to 14 degrees, we call this the snow growth zone. Now, this is very cold, so there are definitely times of the year and places where it's not going to snow. If you don't have temperatures between minus 4 and 14, somewhere in the atmosphere above you, no snow. But there are also times where temperatures are between minus 4 and 14, and there's just not enough moisture in the snow growth zone for snow to form. It's too dry. So if you have enough moisture and if temperatures are between minus 4 and 14, then snow will form. But we're not done yet. Now the question is, will the snow actually reach the ground? Well, if temperatures are below freezing, below 32 degrees, all the way to the surface, then yes, snow. But there are plenty of times where that is not the case. So it might be snowing a couple of thousand feet in the air, but because of warm air near the surface, it reaches the ground as rain. Now, wait a minute. Doesn't it snow, or maybe a rain-snow mix, when temperatures are in the mid or upper 30s at the surface, not just when it's below freezing? Yes, you can get snow when it's warmer than 32 degrees if, and here's another big if, that layer of air above freezing is less than 1,200 feet thick. If it's above 32 degrees for more than 1,200 feet, all the snow is going to melt and it's going to be rain. So, I know I threw a lot at you there, but that's how snow forms and falls. So are you starting to realize why it's hard to forecast? Well, guess what? It gets more complicated, because if only we had to decide between rain and snow. No, that's not the case. There are other winter precipitation types. And the next one to know, and our number three thing you need to know about winter, is sleet. And Sean, as tricky as it is to get snow to form and fall, it's actually trickier to get sleet. So can you walk us through how it happens?
Yes. It's just like you said, with one glaring exception, is that there is some layer of the atmosphere that is above freezing between the area where that snow forms and the ground. And typically that layer is at least several hundred feet thick, so that when snow falls into that layer, it melts and turns to rain, but it's still below freezing closer to the ground. So when that rain drops in that colder layer on the way to the ground, it freezes into little ice pellets. So sleet, ice pellets, they're the same thing. And that's the kind of stuff that pings and bounces when it hits the ground. That's the kind of stuff you can still scrape away if you get to it early enough. And we get a lot of that here in Virginia, because the air, the winds, if you will, don't always come from the same direction through the entire depth of the atmosphere. And that's the key issue. You could have a screaming wind from the southwest, 10 to 15,000 feet up, 5 to 10,000 feet up. But in the bottom 2 or 3,000 feet of the atmosphere, the wind could be from the north. So that's going to drain in cold air very close to the ground or within a couple thousand feet of the ground. So it's not that hard, actually, to end up with sleet, especially in areas immediately eastward from mountain chains in North America. Kind of like here in central Virginia. And we see it sometimes on the Front Range of the Rockies and they get this into Carolina. They get this in Pennsylvania. So that's the story with sleet. But if you get to sleet fast enough, you could scrape it away and it's not a problem. But there's another kind of type of ice that's very unpleasant. Tell us more about that one, Kirsten.
Yeah, I probably got the one that's everybody's worst friend, like hands down when it comes to winter. Freezing rain sucks. Just does. Like, nobody wants to deal with freezing rain. It's bad. It messes up the roads. You get black ice. Everything just can shut down. Actually, it happened here in Tulsa, December 2007. They had a major ice storm here from that, and they were shut down without power for 2 weeks. So I'll get to all that here in just a second. But basically, freezing rain, take what Sean said about the sleet and just cut off that warm layer by just a bit, right? So you have here, you have your precipitation coming through as a frozen, and then it hits that warm layer there, or I'm sorry, reverse that. It's coming down and it's melting, and then it hits that cold air and then it freezes upon contact. That's what's happening with freezing rain. So let me rephrase that again, because I didn't say it right. It's coming down, it's liquid, and then it hits that frozen layer right before the surface. So then by the time it hits your car, it hits your house, it hits the roads, it hits the trees, it hits the power lines, it's frozen. Okay, so here's a couple of little like fun stats about it. All right, so when it comes to ice accumulations, Typically, a quarter inch or less is just an annoyance, but travel is still manageable. 1/4 to 1 inch of ice accumulation will allow for tree limbs to sag or break and most roads to become icy. Over 1/2 of an inch will take down power lines and damage trees, and travel is nearly impossible. But as I was talking about, in December of 2007 here in Tulsa, we had at least 2 to 4 times that. We had 1 to 2 inches of ice accumulation in some spots here in Oklahoma, and it was bad. And I didn't live here. I was in Texas still, and so I wasn't around for the fun. But let me tell you, when I talk to people, it's not a tornado. Well, I say that. There are obviously tornadoes that have hit in this area that have been very bad. But this storm impacted so many people for 2 weeks that they talk about it all the time still. So there you go. Freezing rain.
Yeah. That's hard to wrap my mind around because I know how bad it can get. I mean, it starts to get very disruptive when you're talking about 1/2 inch of freezing rain, 1/2 inch. And again, we're talking about 1/2 inch of ice, just flat ice. And so to be talking about 1 to 2 inches, I can't imagine what a mess that was. And then you're talking about major power outages too. I mean, at that point you have ice on the power line. So you're talking about widespread power outages. Yeah, tree limbs breaking. It's just a bizarre scene just to see and be talking about power outages when it's not necessarily windy. That's the thing. Usually we think of, oh, the power's going to go out if there's lightning and thunderstorms and strong winds. No, the power's going out when there's barely any wind. And it's just this rain, a light rain. It's like, what's going on? But it's rain that's turning to ice. I can't imagine what that was like in Tulsa. That must have been incredible.
Not fun.
Well, you might think we're done here, but no, we're not done yet. We're not done talking about precipitation types. There's one more. Yes, the fifth thing you need to know about winter is that there's a forgotten precipitation type, Grauppel. And it's often forgotten because it's the least common. So Grauppel actually starts out as snow, but it's snow that falls through a layer of tiny supercooled water droplets. That's liquid water that exists when temperatures are below freezing. Yes, it does happen, but not often. Now, when these tiny water droplets bump into a snowflake, they immediately freeze to it. And that changes the shape of the snowflake through a process called riming. So what you end up with is a little white ball that looks a lot like Dippin' Dots ice cream. That's really the best way to describe it. Now, Grauppel is often confused with sleet because they're about the same size and sometimes fall together. But the way you can tell them apart is sleet is clear and hard. Grauppel is white and soft. So if you pick up a piece of sleet and squeeze it between your fingers, it'll stay intact. But pick up a piece of Grauppel and it's gonna fall apart. And that's also how you can tell Grauppel apart from pea-sized hail. Hail is white like Grauppel, but hard. In fact, another name for Grauppel is soft hail. So if you see something white on the ground, it looks a lot like Dippin' Dots, Grauppel. And take a picture because it's rare. And guys, I have a question for you. Have you ever experienced thunder Grauppel?
I think I have. I don't know when, but I think I have.
I did for the first time Halloween day here in Chicago. I was walking to the pet store to buy some crickets for my pet lizard. Yes, I do have a pet lizard. And I was buying him some crickets because he was out of crickets. He needed to eat. And as I was walking back from the pet store on Halloween day, there's a thunderstorm, and first it's rain, but then Grauppel starts to fall, Dippin' Dots all around me, but there's lightning and thunder. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's thunder Grauppel. This is better than thunder snow. This has got to be like one of the rarest forms of weather. And so I embraced the moment with my bag of crickets. On that note, we're going to take another quick break, but don't go anywhere. That was just the precipitation types you need to know. We still have 5 more things you need to know about winter. So stick around, more Across the Sky coming up. Welcome back, everyone, to the Across the Sky podcast. We release new episodes every Monday, not just on our Lee News websites, but on all podcast platforms. So wherever you like to get your podcasts, you can find us there. And if you can subscribe and leave us a review, we sure appreciate it. We're continuing our countdown of the top things to know about winter. And for number 6, we're going to talk about the coldest time of the year. When do we typically see our coldest low temperatures? Well, if you take the average across the United States, it's mid-January. But that's just the average. It definitely varies depending on where you live. There are some places right along the West Coast and in the southwestern U.S. that typically see their coldest temperatures right about now in mid-December. Meanwhile, in northern Michigan and parts of New England, the coldest low temperatures don't typically occur until early February. So in general, as you go from southwest to northeast across the country, the coldest time of the year gets later and later. So why the variation? Why don't we all see the coldest temperatures around the winter solstice, the shortest day of the year? And the answer is, to quote South Park, blame Canada. So the coldest air from the Arctic has to travel across Canada before it reaches the U.S. At the beginning of winter, there's not a lot of snow on the ground there. But as winter goes on, snow cover increases. And that's important because snow helps to lower temperatures. Because snow is white, it reflects sunlight and doesn't let it get absorbed by the ground. So the more snow on the ground in Canada, the less air from the Arctic is modified as it moves over Canada, so the more likely it'll be really cold when one of those Arctic cold fronts pushes into the U.S. Then we have these things called the Rocky Mountains, and they're pretty tall. So that cold air from Canada often doesn't get over the Rockies. And that's why in the western U.S., we see the coldest time of the year earlier in winter, closer to the solstice, because they're not getting that Canadian air. So yes, blame Canada. And I'm glad I finally found a way to reference South Park on the podcast. Guys, how many other pop culture references can we squeeze in here?
Well, we just did a whole podcast on Bob Dylan and the weather, so we got that.
We got to find ways to bring in more TV shows. I love South Park. Gosh, it's funny. And that Blame Canada song, don't get me started. I'll sing it. And sticking with the topic of cold, you know, if only it was just cold, but oftentimes there's a breeze. And that brings us to the seventh thing you need to know about winter, wind chill. Joe, why does the wind make cold weather feel so much worse?
Well, it's just when the air moves around, it really removes heat from your body. That's the scientific explanation. It kind of takes, you know, if you're standing and the air is still, you kind of have a little insulation, a little human heat blanket around you that's keeping you warmer than you would be otherwise. But the wind pretty much takes that all away. It blows it away from you. So when you combine the wind and the cold, you know, you do get a wind chill, and the wind chill temperature is based on the rate of heat loss from exposed skin caused by the wind and cold. Now, there is actually a weather equation for this, and I won't read it to you because it involves letters and those really small numbers, those exponents that we don't have to get into. But essentially, the harder the wind's blowing and the colder it is, the colder the wind chill. I'll just toss out a couple of different combinations for you. I'll toss out three. So if you have a temperature of 40 degrees and the wind is 5 miles an hour, the wind chill is 36, so a 4-degree difference. If the temperature is 30 degrees and the wind is blowing at 15 miles an hour, it's 19 degrees. So that's an 11-degree difference. And then if the temperature is zero and your wind is 25 miles an hour, it feels like negative 24. So that's a 24-degree difference between the two. So, you know, it can be dangerous, wind chills. I mean, there is frostbite that you can get from wind chills. There's actually different degrees of frostbite. So there's first-degree frostbite, second-degree frostbite, third-degree frostbite, and fourth-degree frostbite. First-degree frostbite is when the surface of the skin is frozen. You could also call it frost nip. Then the second degree is where the skin may freeze and harden up. You get blisters from that. Third degree is when you really get into the muscles and tendons from this. And then the fourth degree is where pain really lasts for a day or two. The skin can get blue or black. You can even get gangrene from it. I mean, that's some serious stuff. Most places in the United States will not get to that. But it is certainly possible in the very high elevations of the Rockies, parts of Alaska, Canada, Siberia, and of course, Antarctica down south.
Those are some images I don't like thinking of. Oh no.
I only want to think about the New York Jets when I think about gangrene.
Well, the big takeaway is watch out for the wind chill advisories and those wind chill warnings. That's the heads up that we're talking about dangerous cold with a combination of the cold temperatures and the wind. So when you get those wind chill advisories and wind chill warnings, that's your heads up that you need to layer up the hats and gloves and just try not to spend too much time outside. But switching our focus back to snow, when there's a big snow in the forecast, the word blizzard starts to get used. But the eighth thing you should know about winter is that blizzard actually has a very specific definition. Kirsten, what actually makes a snowstorm a blizzard?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked, Matt. So blizzard, here is how it is defined by the National Weather Service. It is blowing or falling snow with winds of at least 35 miles per hour for at least 3 hours. It can, of course, cause a significant amount of snowfall, and then it reduces visibility to a quarter mile or less. So whenever you're driving, blizzard conditions, that's why they talk about that a lot, is because you have that blowing snow, your visibility is reduced down to about a quarter mile or less in that situation. They're also issued when there's about a blizzard warning, I should say, is issued when there's about an 80% chance or greater that it's going to occur. And it has to last for at least 3 hours, as I said earlier, which could make this travel an issue. A lot of times this, of course, happens up towards the northern central portion of the country in Tulsa. I don't know if I've definitely never lived here in Tulsa whenever there's been a blizzard condition. But it does happen where you get those very strong winds and you do get some heavy snowfall at times. And a lot of times too, in the days before a blizzard, a winter storm watch is usually issued or so. Those blizzard warnings are just put out whenever those conditions are favorable. So not something I think I'd ever want to be in. I probably have at some point in my life, but it's not something that I live in. I should say it that way. It's not something I ever really worry about as much here in Oklahoma. Matt, you probably with Windy City, you probably have to deal with some blizzard conditions sometimes. I don't know how much travel you're actually doing out on the roads, but you probably see that more often there in that part of the country.
Well, they definitely do happen in the Midwest. However, in my 2 years here in Chicago, maybe I've been Chicago's lucky charm because the winters actually haven't been that bad. And so I have not actually been under a blizzard warning in Chicago. They certainly have happened here, but not since I've been here. And actually, you know, I've moved and lived in multiple places of the country. I've never been under a blizzard warning, certainly winter storm warning. So that's the key thing with people like to use the term blizzard. Oh, that was a blizzard, when it was just a lot of snow. And that's not the definition of a blizzard. You have to have the wind component as well. So it has to be that combination of the windy conditions and a lot of snow. It's just a lot of snow. It's not a blizzard. So don't be calling something a blizzard that's not a blizzard. But, you know, we got to talk about the amount of snow because, you know, sometimes, you know, we want to stress the wind and the wind chill, and that's important. But, you know, the biggest question we get as meteorologists in the winter is how much snow? Such an easy question, so tough to answer. You know, forecasting snow amounts is really one of the hardest parts of meteorology. Now, I alluded to a lot of the reasons why snow is hard to forecast earlier, but one of the reasons that often gets forgotten is our ninth thing you need to know about winter, snow ratio. Is it going to be a wet snow or a dry snow? Sean, can you explain this one for us?
Oh yeah, man, because this is a big thing, right? So especially in areas that are relatively close to a coastline, you're going to have wetter snow compared to drier snow, which is what we often have in the plains. So what does that mean? So we know that when the air is warmer, you can have more water vapor in it. And that means even below freezing, you know, you could still, it, you know, 20 degrees is warmer than 10 degrees, right? So there's going to be more water and snow when it's 20 degrees than when it's 10 degrees. So as a result, the moisture content of any one particular snowflake is going to be different depending on what the temperature is. So let's call some snow cold, dry snow. The ratio of snow to rain is about 20 to 1. All right, so that means it would take about 20 inches of snow to melt down into 1 inch of rain, right? The converse of that is when you've got that thick, wet, pasty snow, that's more like 4 to 1. So like 4 inches of snow melts down to 1 inch of rain. The, you know, the first approximation is 10 to 1 as an average, but it's rarely exactly 10 to 1. It's normally running somewhere in between those two levels. But that 20 to 1 stuff, that's when, you know, the temperature is 20, 19, 18, 17 degrees or below that. That 4 to 1 stuff, it's 31 degrees, 32, maybe it's 33 degrees down here at the ground level, and maybe it's just barely below freezing, several hundred to a couple thousand feet up. So the temperature is critical to the type of snow you're going to get, whether it's that heavy, wet snow that it takes so much effort to get off of your car, or that colder, drier, more powdery snow that you can just blow it right off the car really nice and easy. But that kind of snow is not what we get here in Virginia when we get snow.
You know, that's what caught me off guard when I was going to Colorado as a kid and wanting to build snowmen and have a snowball fight. Well, in Silverthorne, Colorado, where my grandmother lives up in the mountains, they get a dry snow very often. And that's the thing that I think is surprising to some people who, again, aren't familiar with snow. Like, trying to build a snowball or a snowman when you're dealing with a dry snow, it is so hard and you're squeezing and hard. But you go to places like Virginia. I lived in Richmond for a year, and yeah, it was not a dry snow. You could very easily make a snowman, easily make a snowball. So just a heads up, you know, having that Colorado Christmas vacation, the kids might be a little frustrated trying to have a snowball fight. You're just flinging like the little, you can make a snowball, but then it just falls apart as you throw it. So yeah, dry snow versus wet snow, or in the meteorological world, as we refer to, snow ratio, very important. But we're going to move on finally to the 10th thing you need to know about winter, and that's winter storm safety. And because we're overachievers, this is actually going to be more than 10 things to know about winter, because we each have a winter storm safety tip for you. I'll go first. And my biggest advice to people who are under a winter storm warning is, if you don't have to travel and be on the roads, don't. It's as simple as that. Now, I know there is necessary travel. People with essential jobs, medical emergencies. But going out to dinner with your friends? No. Going to the grocery store? Do it before the storm. The fewer people on the roads during a winter storm, the better. What did we say during the peak COVID days? Stay home? Well, I'm here to tell you, the same applies to winter storms. Stay home, wait for the storm to end, then venture out. So guys, that's my tip. What else do you have?
I'll talk a little bit about using salt to melt ice. I dealt with this for a couple of years when I used to work in weather consulting, and not all salts are made alike. So usually when you're at the store, you know, when you're buying salt, you're buying basically rock salt, which is sodium chloride. And what happens is that only really is effective until about 15 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, that works for a lot of places, but a number of places it doesn't either. If you're up in New England or the Northern Plains or Canada here. So there's actually a different kind of salt. It's a little more expensive, but it's called magnesium chloride. It actually works down to 20 to 25 degrees. And actually, it's actually a little more environmentally friendly too, but it's more expensive. So it's more expensive, but, you know, it works. If you're going days at a time where it doesn't get out of the teens or the single digits, that's really what you want to do. Otherwise, the sodium chloride that you're throwing down really doesn't do all that much. So a little tip for you as we go into the winter and you're deciding on what I need to buy at the store in terms of keeping your sidewalks and your driveways snow-free.
I can go next if you guys want. Have stuff in the car in case you get stuck, right? I mean, I don't expect everybody to have 6 flares in their car, but heaven's sake, keep some blankets in there. If, you know, keep a couple of those, you know, Cliff bars or those those nutrient bars in case you do get stuck for 2 or 3 hours. And even if it's like, well, it's not that bad, it's 24, 25 degrees. You know, a year and a half ago, there was just this disaster on I-95 here in Virginia when we had a massive snow that it wasn't like it was 15 inches of snow, but the snowfall rate for 2 or 3 hours was about 2 to 3 inches an hour. And everybody just was on I-95 between Fredericksburg and D.C., and they just got stuck, and they just sat for like a day. And you don't want any part of that, man, at all. So if there's even a remote chance of snow in the forecast and you're planning on being on the road more than 2 or 3 minutes, have some blankets in the car, have some of that non-perishable food in the car. So on the off chance that you get stuck, you don't go hungry, you don't get too cold, and all that stuff, because, man, you don't want any part of that. So keep some winter safety stuff in the car in case you do get stuck.
Man, I don't feel like I have as much to contribute to that. I agree with everything that you guys said, but see, I'm not really up on my salt game, Joe. So I learned something new. I don't really know much about that. I feel like we could probably invest in a shovel here at our house. You know, the travel thing, I'm with you on that, but we never really deal with that kind of snowfall here in Tulsa. You know, it's like maybe like 6 inches, you know, maybe a little bit more, and that's like a good snow. So, you know, maybe my suggestion, aside from the wonderful suggestions that you guys gave, is for the winter season, maybe do things like, you know, before it starts, make sure the batteries work in your carbon monoxide detectors, you know, things like that in the house. You know, get your furnace checked before all that happens. We have someone that comes out and checks our furnace once a year before the cold starts. And, you know, so you're not stuck in a situation then when it gets really cold and then your furnace goes out and you're having to wait in a really cold house for the guy to come, you know, the AC guy to come and help you out. So like I said, I'm living in Texas, and yes, I've lived in Denver, but you know, Denver's not as, it's not like living up in like Crested Butte, you know what I mean? Like Denver is not, it's not that bad. Because if we do get a snow, like Sean said, he wants the snow to come and then just go away. Well, if that's what you want, it's for a good snowfall, and then it to just like melt in a day or two, you should move to Denver, because that's what happens all the time.
But no, Kirsten, I like, you know, telling people to, you know, to be prepared. And the one last thing I'll add is just monitor the forecast, because hopefully what we've done with this episode is shown you how complicated it is when you're dealing with precipitation types. Is it going to be rain? Is it going to be freezing rain? Is it going to be grapple or sleet or snow? And is it going to be a wet snow or a dry snow? So winter weather is very difficult to forecast. And that's why people get frustrated with us and the forecast change. And what looked like a 6-inch snow suddenly becomes a 2-inch snow. That's just the way it works. It's getting better. Our forecast accuracy longer out, farther out is getting better, but there's always going to be modification. We'll give you the heads up when there's a potential for something, but don't just, when you see a big snowfall forecast 5 days out, don't be like, oh, it's going to be a big snow in 5 days. Keep checking the forecast every day, because there's probably going to be adjustments. Sometimes the snow amount might go up, other times it might go down. So always keep an eye on the forecast. We will keep you posted on what to expect. All right. Well, that was our top 10 plus a little extra things to know about winter. But before we wrap up, we did get a question this week from one of our listeners. Pat Herberger emailed us and asked, why are meteorologists called meteorologists? Why not weatherologists? They rarely talk about meteors, but they always talk about weather. And you know what, Pat? That's a great point. There is an explanation for the name, though. Sean, why are we called meteorologists?
It comes from the old Greek word meteor, which basically they use for anything falling out of the dang sky. And the meteor, as we think of it today, that term really didn't come into vogue until 200-300 years ago from English. So the term meteor, meaning rock falling out of the sky, is fairly new. You know, the old Greek word meteor, been around a lot longer. So that's where the term originates from. And for those who are very much into geeky stuff, the term for any precipitation falling out of the sky is known as hydrometeors. In fact, for the longest time, the Weather Prediction Center, I think, had the nickname Hydrometeor Prediction Center to cover anything that had some kind of liquid connotation, solid kind of, you know, anything that was H2O, frozen, grapple, crystalline, liquid, falling out of the sky, hydrometeor. So that's where all that comes from. So yeah, it's just a problem with how language evolves.
Yeah, but I've had this come up before, because there have been certain times where people ask me, oh, what do you do? And I say, I'm a meteorologist. And then they follow up with, oh, you study meteors. I'm like,
yes, hydrometeors, a special kind of
not the kind of meteors you're thinking about. Yes, hydrometeors. So then I always have to clarify, no, a weather. Oh, okay.
Yeah, say hydrometeors and see what kind of looks you get out of that one, buddy.
Some wide-eyed looks. Well, thanks again, Pat, for sending us the question. Do you have a weather question for us? Send us an email at podcasts@lee.net. Or if you're one of those people that still enjoys a good old-fashioned phone call, leave us a voicemail at 609-272-7099. And just like we did with Pat, we'll be happy to answer your question on our next episode. And finally, a quick programming note. So we release our new episodes on Mondays, and next Monday is Christmas Day. I don't think too many people are going to be listening to podcasts that day. So because of that, we are going to take a break for a week to enjoy the holidays. But we will have an episode for you the following Monday, New Year's Day. And before we start a new year, we've got to look back on the last year. So our January 1st episode is going to be a year in review, a look back on the weather that was in 2023. But that's going to do it for this week's episode of Across the Sky. On behalf of Lee Enterprises and my fellow meteorologist Joe Martucci in Atlantic City, Sean Sublett in Richmond, and Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, I'm Matt Hollander in Chicago. Thanks for listening, everyone. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We'll talk to you again in 2024.